Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio. Located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman Report. It's Monday, June 24th, 2024. Eric, I've got to ask you, how was your weekend, sir?
Short.
It's always too short, isn't it, folks?
Yep.
I got to tell you. Yeah. But I got to see you and the children, my grandchildren, your children. This weekend, it was great. Yeah, brief, but great. They stopped by for a visit, brought food. What more can you ask for? Very proud of my daughter, my son-in-law, Eric the Tech, raising great kids, having a great family. It really, folks, that's what this is all about. It's about the preservation, the moral, the cultural preservation of America. That's where we're at today. Okay, a lot of stuff to get into, including what the heck happened in Russia with American weapons, and why? World War III going kinetic, perhaps. Some payback coming. I've got to say this, that there's warning signs flashing everywhere that in the run-up to the election, I guarantee you there will be some attacks. In the 75 days between election day, well, nowadays, what is it, election months? But in the 75 days between November 5th and January 20th, the most critical time in American history, I think, short of the Civil War. So we're going to be mentioning that. And Maxine Waters coming out with some stuff. Oh, and the debate this week. But first, I want to get into a couple of things about the Supreme Court. But before I do that, I want to thank you, the sponsors, the supporters, of this broadcast, as well as the sponsors, including and especially ChuckDefense.com/Hagman. You know, Chuck Norris, doing another movie. My goodness, this guy is 81. This guy is just absolutely going, I mean, he's at his, compare him to Biden. Just do that. My goodness. But have you ever wondered what happened to him? And the video I saw, in fact, you're seeing part of it on your screen. He made this video, and I was surprised about this. He's in his 80s, still kicking behinds and working out and staying active. What's even more shocking is he's stronger, can work out longer, and has plenty more energy left for his grandkids. That's what I wanted. So I kind of, in a left-handed sort of way, I kind of asked to show people this video and to be a sponsor as a sponsor. But Norris did this, all of this, by making just one change. He still feels like he's in his 50s. That's what he says. His wife even started doing this one thing too. She never felt better. She says she feels like 10 years younger. Her body looks leaner. She's got energy all day. And you can watch this for yourself in the video. And something a little funny. I was trying to do 25 push-ups. Okay. It was not a pretty sight. I thought, man, you know, what's wrong with me? So that's what kind of led me to this. Seriously. And so I watched this video. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains everything. So make sure you watch it by going to ChuckDefense.com/Hagman or by clicking the link below this video. It's going to change the way you think about your health. Once again, that's ChuckDefense.com/Hagman. And click on the link in the description box below. Watch the video now. You're not going to believe how simple this is. Just a reminder, he's 81. Chuck Norris is 81. And he has more energy than I do. He's discovered that he could create dramatic changes to his health simply by focusing on three things that sabotage our body as we age. Watch his method by clicking the link in the description box below. Or if you somehow can't find it, which I highly doubt, the URL is chuckdefense.com/Hagman. Very simple. All right, I want to start out by talking about the remaining rulings that the Supreme Court is scheduled to issue. And they're going to begin dropping, I believe, on Wednesday. The next opinion day is scheduled for Wednesday. Okay, so these are going to be the most important Supreme Court rulings, I believe, in, well, since Roe v. Wade pushed the infanticide issue back to the states. Okay. Opinions coming down the line include the following. The presidential immunity appeal. An abortion case or an infanticide case from Idaho, and a very consequential challenge to the Biden regime, their censorship efforts. Okay, three cases, three big ones, and some smaller ones. I'm going to go through them right now so you understand what's coming, beginning on the drop day of Wednesday. We also have Chevron, the Chevron. You may hear people talk about these cases, and you might say, what's that about? Because that's really, until you dig into this, very few network hosts understand or dig into the grit of these opinions of the Supreme Court. So the Chevron ruling, as it's referenced. Now, under the Supreme Court's 1984 Chevron ruling, courts have a specific instruction. And what that is, when they're dealing with civil matters like this, they're instructed to defer to reasonable agency interpretation of laws when the language of the statute is ambiguous. What the heck did I just say? Okay. So, in other words, the courts are to defer to reasonable agency interpretations of the law or of the series of laws that deal with the case when the language of the statute is ambiguous. That sounds a little bit twisted to me. Chevron deference gives the government an unfair upper hand in litigation against its citizens, against you and I, allowing agencies to assert their interpretations of statutes in court without facing real resistance. And this could include topics or issues from Second Amendment rights to the freedom of speech and religious liberty. Please understand this. It's a big deal. It's a big case. So what we're looking for in this case, obviously, is the guardrails to be put in place to stop the unfair upper handedness in litigation, in the adjudication of cases by the government against its citizenry. That's the Chevron case. And it goes back to 84. And it played a role in other matters as well. But now the Supreme Court could overturn Chevron in deference to two cases brought by fishermen, actually, of all things. And you may hear about this. So again, understand what you're hearing. The fishermen, Loper Bright Enterprises versus Raimondo. That's one party or one case. And the and Relentless Inc. versus the Department of Commerce. Now, in both of those cases, this to give you an outline here, Fishing companies sued after the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration implemented a rule requiring them, now get this, to pay $700 a day to cover the salaries of federally mandated onboard observers, which lower courts upheld based on the Chevron ruling. Does that make your head hurt? Man, it should. It certainly should make your wallet hurt. So you've got oversight that you as a taxpayer are paying for to make sure that you're following the guidelines pursuant to Chevron, the Chevron case. Okay. The second thing, the second case. This is a big one. I'm watching this one like a hawk. Biden regime, their censorship efforts. Now, wide-ranging government efforts to encourage social media platforms, companies, to censor speech online came before the justices for oral arguments back in March. You tracking? Okay. And you probably heard this case. You know the case as Murthy versus Missouri. Now, this case, Murthy v. Missouri, asks them to consider whether the Biden regime's conduct violates the First Amendment. Hang on now. Got to turn the page here on my notes. Yeah, I would say it's a rather important case. The Republican attorneys general of both Missouri and Louisiana, along with five individual plaintiffs whose own speech was censored, and ours was too, still is, brought the lawsuit. So again, in the censorship case, and as I stated, Murtha, let me just make sure here that I've got this correct. Murthy versus Missouri, Republican attorneys general of Missouri and Louisiana, along with five individual plaintiffs whose own speech was censored, brought the lawsuit. And documents that were obtained through litigation demonstrated the government frequently asked, or even in some cases demanded, certain social media platforms and companies to suppress misinformation. Misinformation on what? Well, you know, the vaccines, COVID-19, the non-vaccine vaccines, the mRNA jabs, the gene editing experimentation, the election of 2020, the election of 2022. Election integrity issues. A federal judge first issued an injunction in July of last year, finding the case arguably involves the most massive attack against free speech in the United States history, or in the history of the United States. The Fifth Circuit affirmed a limited version of the injunction, blocking the White House, the Surgeon General, the CDC, and FBI from coercing or significantly encouraging companies to censor speech. So that's what that's about. And we expect to hear something on that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, something, anytime now, this week. Then we get into a case that, I mean, this is one of the most bizarre implementations of a statute ever. Obstruction charges for the J6 defendants, which could also apply and impact President Donald J. Trump. And you know it as the Fisher case. In Fisher v. U.S., January 6th defendant Joseph Fisher challenged the Department of Justice's interpretation of the obstruction statute. He was convicted of violating Section 1512C2. You've probably heard this before. Now, by charging a violation of Section 1512C2, which I should add is a law or a statute that dealt with fighting corporate fraud, it levies up to 20 years in prison against anyone who corruptly obstructs, influences, or impedes any official proceeding. That's what the Fisher case is. Just so people know, and it revolves around the statute section 1512C2, the punishment is 20 years, and it's, again, levied against the J6 defendants. And the ruling could also impact Special Counsel Jack Smith's prosecution of President Donald Trump for seeking to overturn the 2020 election, since two of the charges in the indictment are connected to the statute. And just so people know, there's a clip out there on roving around social media. I'm not going to play it, but the essence of the clip. I believe it was Merrick Garland, or I'm fairly certain it was Merrick Garland. He was asked, how did Jack Smith become a special prosecutor? Did Congress appoint him? No. Did the Biden regime appoint him? No. Wait a second. According to the special or independent prosecutor statute, the appointment has to be official, formal, and you just can't pick somebody out of thin air, put him in that position, call him a special prosecutor, and then give him a task. That's kind of a different subject, but you get the idea. My goodness. So if the Supreme Court says, wait a second, this is a misapplication of 1512C2, then really that undercuts Jack Smith and a large part of his case against President Trump. Not to mention that Jack Smith doesn't even have the authority. He was not properly appointed pursuant to the special prosecutor, special counsel law. See, they're running roughshod over our Constitution. And if you look at that Supreme Court building right there on your screen, that should mean something to everyone. And then we have the Idaho, and I'm going to use the word abortion. I don't like that word. It's infanticide, period, end of story. But Idaho's abortion ban, you're going to hear it talked about, thrown out there when the ruling comes down. That's how it's going to be portrayed. Now, the Supreme Court, again, is expected to rule on this. And you've got to think about this, too. What does the Biden regime and the people who comprise that cabal of mopes, muppets, what do they, I mean, for crying out loud, what do they stand for? The Supreme Court is expected to rule on what the Biden regime alleges is a conflict between a federal statute that claims mandates abortions and an Idaho state law banning abortions except when necessary to save the mother's life and in cases of rape or incest. Now, again, think about that for a second. The Supreme Court is expected to rule this week on what the Biden regime alleges is a conflict between a federal statute that claims mandates abortions. A federal statute mandating abortion. Okay. And in Idaho, state law banning abortions except when necessary to save the mother's life and in cases of rape or incest. These people are so bloodthirsty. Think about that. You know, it was, I mentioned Roe v. Wade earlier. Right after the Supreme Court handed down the landmark ruling that pushed the decision of infanticide to the states, the Biden Department of Justice sued Idaho over its Defense of Life Act. Let that sink in for a second. You've got the federal government suing a state over the Defense of Life Act. You getting it? The Department of Justice, under this much ballyhooed Merrick Garland, that steaming pile of crap, argues the pro-life law prevents ER doctors from performing abortions necessary under the Federal Emergency Treatment and Labor Act's definition of what they call stabilizing care. That's kind of getting into the case itself. The Supreme Court has allowed Idaho's ban to remain in effect while it decides the case. Well, thank you so much. I wonder how many innocent children have been saved from that. And then you got another one, Oregon's city public camping ban. I'm not going to get into that. But the immunity appeal. President Trump's immunity appeal. This is something that's extremely important to understand. You know, you hear people from The View and other places going saying, well, you know, President Trump could kill Melania on the front lawn of the White House and not be charged. Or he would have immunity from that. No. As usual, these people don't know what the hell they're talking about. President Trump, through this case, is seeking to dismiss the federal election interference case. Now, but it has wider implications than that. But in his case, it's based on the argument that he's got presidential immunity for, listen to me now, official acts taken while in office. Now, the lower courts rejected the argument, but the Supreme Court is mulling this over as we speak, and we expect to see a decision this week. Now, President Trump, what this has done, his appeal has delayed that Smith case now for months, causing the district court judge to cancel the initially scheduled March 4th trial date and making it absolutely certain, all but certain, that he will not face any trial before the 2024 election. So what this is doing, what the Supreme Court is likely going to do, and this is just my thinking as I read through the case, is certainly differentiate between official and unofficial acts of the president, because it's always been there, the constitutional separation of powers, but the constitutional, the presidential immunity has always been there for federal or for official acts. Just so people know that. I mean, again, you're not going to have a president go out and commit some atrocity unofficially and then run back in the White House and say, you know, hey, I'm at home base now. You can't touch me. Although that's what they want you to think. Now, but should President Trump lose this appeal, again, the implications are much broader. Let's say that the Supreme Court says, well, you know what? You don't have immunity for even official acts. And you've got to think about the composition of the Supreme Court, but you don't have immunity for even official acts if it involves, oh, I don't know, the murdering of anybody. Okay. Well, then let's talk about, we can go back and talk about Clinton's bombing of essentially an aspirin factory. There's not one president in recent memory that hasn't committed an act that resulted in civilian or collateral deaths in an official capacity. It's just not there. So this would tie the hands, an adverse ruling would tie the hands, of course, of all presidents. So just so you understand what's at stake here. Oh, my goodness. So it's going to be a busy week for the Supreme Court dropping cases. And I expect, I'll tell you what, I expect the rulings are not, the immunity rulings are not going to be clean. In other words, I think there's going to be people looking at this, legal experts looking at the ruling, because you've got some really radical leftist judges on the Supreme Court. And one vegetable, I think. The vegetable, the, you know, Johnny Brown Jackson or whatever. So I'm waiting on that. Was I talking about World War III when I first started? I want to show you this. The U.S. Air Force directed the ATACMS missile strike against Russian civilians today. Now, this appeared on Twitter. There are several other media outlets that showed the actual, and I believe this was yesterday that this happened, but there are several media outlets that have been showing the actual attack on civilians. The U.S. Air Force directed a missile strike against Russian civilians. This is an act of war. You can read this on Kim.com, at Kim.com. And there's some pretty good analysis about this. But this is an act of war by the U.S. government against Russia. Did Biden seek permission from Congress to start a direct war with Russia? Did we Americans sign up for this? No, heck no, of course not. And if you scroll down to the image, Eric, that you can see, let's see here. That's U.S. drone directed at ATACMS missile strike, dropping deadly cluster bomb on civilians in this Russian city. If you look at the image, you can see where this Russian city is. Excuse me. And there is video footage of this. It really is not, it's not graphic or anything, but it's just, I don't see any value of playing it. All right, if you scroll down a little bit more on this, let's see, did I put this as a second one? No, I didn't. Okay, if you can enlarge that, that would be great. That post right there. Okay, so if you look at this post, this is pretty important here. Again, by Kim.com. In this same thread, folks, you can go to HagmanPI.com underneath the, if you open the program description. Now, I've gotten a couple of emails. I think one day I failed to put in the links, and that was my fault, and I apologize. I still haven't done that. I will take care of that. But 99.99% of the time, I'm usually pretty good about this. I put the links in the program description box, but at HagmanPI.com. Okay, so in this, the background about this, the Russian military is using GPS jamming to prevent drone and missile strikes from Ukrainian territory. That's why the U.S. Air Force Global Hawk provided targeting data and remote control for these for this particular attack. It's an act of war. It's an overt attack of war by the U.S. government against Russia. All right, there's that. By the way, I've got a special guest coming up here shortly, and there's some great news. Landon from SaveThem.org, the international component along of Russ's group, along with ShatterOps.org, but SaveThem.org, is going to share some very important information about what's happened here in the recent days and weeks, and I'm so excited about this. I'm going to pretend like I don't know and just ask him to explain everything, because the way he can explain it to you is going to, it's going to put a smile on your face, and it's going to help you understand that the support that we receive, that he receives, helps the children and does affect justice on the perpetrators. I'm going to go to, let's go right through, right to video two here. This is Michael Morrell. This is a short video. It's about three, well, when I say short, it's about 3 minutes long from the start. This is a clip from YouTube, or it's on YouTube, from Face the Nation. This is Mike Morrell. And again, folks, please understand, these current and former intelligence officials understand what their place is and what they do in the revolving door between the media and the IC community. More on that in a moment. Watch this video clip. This is cut two in the show notes.
We're joined now by former CIA Deputy Director Mike Morrell. He's also our CBS News Senior National Security Contributor. Good to have you here.
Good to be here, Margaret.
You just had that Foreign Affairs article that got all this attention. The terrorism warning lights are blinking red again. You compared the moment we are in now to what happened in the lead up to 9/11. And I want to play something FBI Director Chris Wray said earlier this month.
Our most immediate concern has been that individuals or small groups will draw a twisted inspiration from the events in the Middle East to carry out attacks here at home. But now, on top of that, increasingly concerning is the potential for a coordinated attack here in the homeland, not unlike the ISIS-K attack we saw at the Russia Concert Hall back in March.
That's chilling. The White House says the president is briefed regularly on threats. If that is true, do you think he's doing enough?
Hard for me to say whether he's doing enough, because a lot of what needs to be done we wouldn't see publicly. What I would say is I ran into a lot of current intelligence officers and current policymakers after we published the article. The response was almost universal in, we're glad you wrote this, it's really important. I read that as maybe there's a lack of sense of urgency here, and that's really important.
A lack of sense of urgency among members of the public or the government?
The administration, yeah. And Congress, quite frankly. There needs to be a sense of urgency about this. And I think the American public needs to understand what the threat is. That's why we called for a public congressional hearing just on the terrorist threats to the homeland, right? Not a hearing on threats broadly, but threats to the homeland. And then we need to hear what the administration is doing about this in a broad sense, right? Not the details, but in a broad sense.
Well, I asked the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, Republican Mike Turner, about exactly right. Your proposal, Sunday, yeah. And he really kind of dismissed it. Yeah, he said, we've covered that.
He said we already covered it. They haven't.
Right. He did call for the administration to declassify information. Our colleague Sam Vinograd, who ran vetting at the border for DHS, said basically that the information that feeds those vetting lists, the watch lists, is dependent on how much good intelligence is collected, and that has been under-resourced. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that 100%. We've shifted resources from the counterterrorism community to the China community. Now, that's understandable to some degree. It's been significant. So I think there's a cost to the intelligence we're collecting. The vetting system, beyond not having the information, the vetting system does not provide all of the information that the government has. There was just a DHS Inspector General report that outlined all the problems with the vetting system. So it's lack of information, and then it's the system itself.
That, and we have it on a graphic. The report said Customs and Border Protection could not access all federal data necessary to enable complete screening and vetting of non-citizens seeking admissions into the United States. This is the government saying we can't vet everyone properly.
Right. And Customs and Border doesn't have the technology, right, to even connect. There are all sorts of issues here that need to be resolved.
All right. You saw that graphic. And if you read between the lines, what they're saying is, look, we're not vetting these people. We don't, the ones, not the gotaways, obviously don't know who they are, but the ones that come in, we can't vet them. That's what that report stated right there. Okay. Again, you've got to read between the lines. Now, who is Mike Morrell? He was the deputy CIA director when the Benghazi attacks happened. Sorry about that. Kind of went out of screen there. That was he worked under Hillary Clinton when she was the Secretary of State. Now, hold that thought. I would compare Morrell historically to someone like James Angleton as a deputy CIA director, okay, a CIA operative, a CIA officer. But within the CIA, this guy holds a lot of weight. He was also the guy who lied his ass off by getting the 51 intelligence agents together to write the letter to say that the Hunter Biden laptop, oh, that was Russian disinformation. So he had his paws, mitts, fingers in every bad pie out there. What Angleton did with the Kennedy assassination, in my view, I compare that to Morrell's position with the political assassination and maybe more of President Donald Trump. Now, here's the issue. Here's the issue. The 51 IC intelligence community agents, it's a lie. They admitted it's a lie. So that was in 2020. Morrell led that effort with the Department of State and the CIA. It was all a lie. You know it. They knew it. Now we all know it. He's never been held to account. He's never been brought to justice or demand. No one has said, hey, we want you to answer for your crimes. And that's a crime. So now we come to 2024. And this should alarm everyone. He's now saying, look, there's going to be a terrorist attack. There will be a terrorist attack in the U.S. because of this weakness. But it's a weakness of Biden, the Biden regime, and the CIA, all or the intelligence community, whether it's DHS or FBI. It's of their own creation. They cannot lie Biden into office in 2024. You get that right? Like they did in 2020. Or at least play their position to lie him into office. That was part of it. Again, multifaceted situation, but in terms of the intelligence community's efforts, that was part of it, a big part of it, the IC's efforts. They can't do that again. Because they were exposed. So now what? They've got to go deeper. They've got to give something, or get, go worse, I should say, not deeper. Mike Morrell, who is working for CBS now, essentially saying, look, a terrorist attack is going to happen on American soil. That's what he's saying. If I was an odds maker in Vegas, I'd take the odds. And it's going to be worse, or as great, if not worse, than 9/11 on American soil. And why? It's all by design. But I want to show you something else, which is related but not directly related to a terrorist attack. This is video 3. It's a minute long. You saw the interviewer there, Margaret Brennan, saying, hey, Morrell, look, even you guys, even the IC, they admitted that there's no vetting out there. Right? You saw that. Now watch this. This is the same Margaret Brennan in a town hall setting meeting discussing this issue with a voter. A voter comes on, a citizen comes on and says, well, vetting's a problem. They're not being vetted. Listen to what Margaret Brennan, the same Margaret Brennan you just saw, listen to what she says here. This is cut 3.
Day one, that current President Biden was elected, he immediately, by the stroke of a pen, undid everything that President Trump had done in closing the border. We had security at the border. We were vetting the people that wanted to come in. And with the stroke of a pen, day one, he opened the border. He opened the doors without any vetting process. So it was his choice. He has to take responsibility for that, he and his administration.
You do know that there is vetting that border officials do when they,
no, they
encounter
don't.
Someone. They do. I've been to the federal facilities. When someone is detained, when they are captured, when they cross illegally, they are taken into federal custody, and those agents do vet people. The success of that vetting may be in question, the efficacy of it, but they are. If someone sneaks in undetected, then they're definitely not vetted.
So my question to Margaret Brennan, did you forget that interview with Mike Morrell? Just asking. Did the meds kick in a little bit too early that day? Or this day? How can you sit there with a straight face and say, yeah, well, no, that's wrong. That's wrong. They're being vetted. Oh, but the vetting might not work. We can question the efficacy of the vetting. Really? Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. But they're lying to your face because they are scared. Again, with the debate coming up this Thursday. And, I'm trying in my mind to think, to picture what this debate is going to look like, how it's going to play out. I don't know if they're going to have Biden jacked up on, jumbo juice or whatever that stuff is that they give him. The guy just can't keep up. And more importantly, he cannot hide his lies. So the, I've got to say this, the media is going to do it for him. They talk about deep fakes and cheap fakes. If we can play video 5 real quick, it's only 43 seconds long. This is, I'll just give you an example of how afraid they are. This is President Trump's party spokesperson sparring with a CNN anchor here. You got to check this out, because this is where we're at today with respect to the mainstream media. And then I've got in the wings here, special guest Landon from SaveThem.org. And buckle in for this interview, this upcoming segment. Go ahead and play cut five.
It takes someone 5 minutes to Google Jake Tapper, Donald Trump, to see that Jake Tapper has
I'm going to stop this interview if you continue to attack my colleagues. I would like to talk about Joe Biden and Donald Trump, who you work for.
Yes.
If you are here to speak on his behalf, I am willing to have this conversation.
I am stating facts that your colleagues have stated in the past.
Okay.
Now,
I'm sorry, guys. We're going to come back out to the panel. Caroline, thank you very much for your time. You are welcome to come back at any point. She is welcome to come back and speak about Donald Trump, and Donald Trump will have equal time to Joe Biden when they both join us now at later this week in Atlanta for this debate.
That reminds me, if there was a third person there, that reminds me of the old SNL skit where, and excuse the expression, Jane, you ignorant slut. Okay. Do you remember that skit on Saturday Night Live back in the mid-70s where there was going back and forth? What this anchor was doing, of course, the context of this clip was what about the debate on Thursday? You know, let's talk about that. And what President Trump's spokesperson was trying to get at was the issue of the interview or the debate moderators being slanted or biased toward Joe Biden to cover for him. Don't forget, they're giving Biden two bathroom breaks. Seriously? I mean, what kind of debate rules are these? You got to be out of your flipping mind to even think that this is going to be fair to President Trump. But they're doing everything in their power to get rid of President Trump. And I'm going to say this. The only thing they can do is kill the guy. And if that happens, may God help us all, because all hell is going to break loose. But I think all hell is going to break loose anyway. Speaking of hell, the children of this country, the children of the world under this globalist agenda are suffering. They're being ritually sacrificed. They're being trafficked. They're being killed. And this has only risen dramatically. This has risen dramatically since Biden opened the southern border, since other globalists opened their borders in this globalist want for this newfangled world order. That's, I'm telling you right now, and I've said this before, the blood of innocent children and innocent children, that's the currency of the globalists. With me right now is a man who is the man behind SaveThem.org, in the face of SaveThem.org, an organization that deserves your support, deserves our support. And they work on the international side of things. Remember, Shatter Ops, domestic, American, southern border stuff. Limited range of area. Now, Save Them is the international part. Different entity. Sole entity. But SaveThem.org is, in fact, focused on the international side of things. Landon, I'm not going to, no last names here, is the man behind this. And I'm going to ask him, just although I know the deets, I'm going to ask him just to come on right now, give me a brief rundown of his organization, and then get right into his latest operation. Landon, thanks so much for coming on. Thanks for bearing with me, too.
Thanks, Mr. Hagman. Good to see you too. Sorry for this kind of corny Zoom setup I have here. I couldn't figure out how to clear the background, so bear with me.
I wouldn't know either. So you look good though, man. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you too. It's wild. I mean, I have a lot of empathy for Joe Biden. I could use some jumbo juice, I think is what you called it.
Yeah.
and many potty breaks. So yeah, man, no, I hear you. It's a crazy season, but thank you for having me on. We finally have had a little bit of victory in some long fights. So in understanding who Save Them is, we began in 2014 based out of Southern Africa. And it was largely a missions operation that was working with orphans that got converted to a counter trafficking operation. And the reality is that the churches on the ground told us that kids were being kidnapped off the streets. This one township was losing 5 to 7 kids a week, and they asked us to help. So we figured we'd do something about it. And 10 years ago, we built a safe house, and we started kidnapping women and children from the Nigerian crime syndicates. And we figured once we had to... I mean, there was nothing really to do other than to do something. So we did that. And once we had the victims, we started to learn about what they were involved in, how they were taken. And we started forming networks with the authorities and figuring out how we could start dismantling this operation in South Africa. So over time, as we gained our different friends in the field, we started finding that there was women being moved from Johannesburg to Atlanta. And that brought us into the transatlantic space. And we started working stateside as well. And we've got a lot of partners here that our role in the U.S. is a bit more to train and equip and stand up partners. And so we have great partners that we work with. You've spent a lot of time working with Luke at Shatter Ops. Those are great dudes. I spent a lot of time with Russ Dizdar before he was dead because he had that inside knowledge of how to educate the authorities on the reality of the criminal footprint of the occult. And it's something that we stumbled into in our work. And so that was a great relationship. And then over time, we've gotten to know Craig and his team, and they're doing great stuff. And there are others I can't really talk about stateside. But a lot of good folks doing work both on rescue, identification of victims, and safe housing. There's some good safe houses out there, folks. There aren't nearly enough of them, but those who staff and work them are God's gold, you know, and praise to them out there for all the work they do, and praise him for putting this on the heart of the church to help these children. So I wanted,
just so people know, real quick, terminology wise. When you say safe house, you're talking about a location where the child and perhaps the mother or the custodian of the child or children are taken and watched over because they escaped from or wanted by the bad guys, basically, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of a three-tiered process. When you first rescue someone, they're pretty broken, pretty busted up. A lot of them will be on drugs because that's what was used to control them. So you have to go into detox, medical care, all of that. And that's the stabilization phase. That can last up to 2 months. And at that point, you transition into sort of a short-term care window. We'll just call that 2 months to 2 years. That's pretty wild, right? Short-term care is 2 years. And that's when you engage in the trial process, any kind of depositions, any children that have gone missing that need to be further recovered. Because most of the ladies that we've rescued, they have children who were stolen during the journey. And so we go out and help reclaim those souls and bring them into the custody of their mother. And we do that too. And then there's a long-term piece, which then looks at helping these victims move into really reintegration into society, which some won't ever. They actually end up being staff at a lot of these places, and that's okay as well. So what I will say is that when we started, we were doing safe housing primarily to help victims who were just rescued. over the years, we've been able to mentor and stand up partners who do that quite well. They're doing a great job. And the authorities asked us to move a bit more into witness protection. So during the trial process, once the perpetrators find out who the victims are that are going to put them behind bars, hits are put out on their lives, and these victims don't really make it through the trial process. And that happened in South Africa. The first 100 or so cases that went through the National Prosecuting Authority never were completed because the victims all disappeared. And so they asked us to move into witness protection, which we did. And we just completed successfully, to the glory of God, a 4-year process, which began with the rescue of 2 human trafficking victims in 2017, the arrest of the perpetrators in 2018, the beginning of a trial process in 2019, which just yielded 4 consecutive life sentences without parole for the human traffickers as of 2 weeks ago. So it is a battle of perseverance to try and actually make a difference in this world. But I'm very thankful for the Save Them team who has persevered, and all of our partners in the authorities who never quit. We actually had a judge who pretty much died on the bench during that process, and it set us back almost 18 months. And so when these things happen, you just have to keep on keeping on. And to see justice serve and to see these victims be able to walk freely knowing that their perpetrators are behind bars is a huge thing. And oh, by the way, one of those girls, she's getting married. And how cool
how cool is that?
How cool is that?
So you went from a situation. Now, we're talking about South Africa now, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So you went from a situation where the first 100 witnesses, victim witnesses, never made it into the courtroom to testify.
They either never made it in or they didn't make it through the testimony process. We did have a handful who did actually testify and broke down halfway through the trial, and they were deemed insane. And that's when we started learning about dissociative identity disorder as well. And what we found is that a bunch of human trafficking victims have personality splits from their trauma and other things. But that trauma specifically does yield DID, as it's referred to, and they couldn't make it through trial. They were actually switching personalities through the trial, and then the court basically deemed them as unreliable witnesses, and then we were kind of left picking up the pieces. This one girl, she's a gem of a human being. Her life went pear-shaped when her fiance died in a motorcycle wreck, and her brother sold her to the crime syndicates to clear his drug debt, and she went crazy basically during the trial. She couldn't handle it. And, it's the tragedy of it all. So the witness protection trial piece is very important just to help these victims who have come out to actually make it through the process and then come out the other side whole and healthy and being able to start that walk of discipleship with their local church, all of that. It's pretty traumatic.
Okay. So in the case that you just had the victory, the most recent victory, it was a case that began back in 2017. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. So intelligence gathering, on the ground intel feeds began in 2016. That there was this house where folks had been trafficked, and it was in 2017 where we found them and initiated rescue, and we pulled them out, and then that began an understanding. We then had to spend 9 months plus with the authorities to then go find the cockroaches who had scattered during the rescue. Once we found them, we ran a sting. I don't know how much to say about this. I was personally involved in that one. You can imagine a situation where the American with the money kind of comes in and books the situation. And I had the good guys in my trunk of my car. And once I had a positive ID on the perpetrators, we popped the trunk as I went back to fetch my wallet. And they raided the house, and we closed that down, and that's how that worked. And so we were able to get everybody behind bars.
Now, in that situation, yeah. Let me just ask, were the police helpful? Were they there? Was this not involving the police at that time?
At that point, we had brought in a group called Crime Intelligence, the Hawks, which is like South Africa's FBI. Okay. And so they were with us. They were armed. They were in the trunk. They were waiting outside the gates. But we have to do the hard part, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're
the pants-wetting part. I'm going to tell you right now, Landon, folks, you've got 99% of the population out there have never been in that position to jump out or to go in as an operational asset. I remember, you know, going in and being the bag man or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that few minutes of serenity or seeming calmness is followed by, I don't know, 2-3 minutes of just, holy crap, I'm going to wet my pants because, you know, everything's going, I mean, you got people getting taken down. You got some cases, perhaps shots fired. You got people running, jumping out windows, outdoors. I get that. Folks, that's what that guy right there, that's what he does.
Yeah, that's true story. I have to say, though, the part that really made me want to wet my pants was once the guys went in and started raiding the house, the guys on the inside either opened the door or something, and a pit bull ran out.
Oh.
And I was left in the yard with the pit bull, and this thing started coming at me. I didn't know what to do, and I'm not really a dog guy. Yeah, I'm not like Mr. Hagman, you know. I don't have a huge knowledge of dogs. But I looked around me and there was a pile of used condoms and disposed McDonald's and Coca-Cola bottles next to the wall. And I looked over and I thought, what am I going to do? This pit bull is charging at me. And I grabbed a 2-liter Coca-Cola bottle and I held it up and I chucked it so that the pit bull would go chase it. But then he didn't want to go away. He wanted to play catch. And I just thought, praise the Lord, because if that thing charged me, I literally did not know what to do. And I didn't want to shoot the dog. I mean, that's not cool. And I'd rather, you know, see the dog go on. But anyways, true story.
Wow. you can't make that up. I mean, these are things that happen that you can chronicle really in a report or in a book or even conversationally. You just can't make that up. Okay. Well, I'm glad the pit bull survived and chased the or wanted to play catch with you.
The dog was nice.
Man, oh, man. Is that typical, though? Do they have – would that be like a – and I guess I'm asking kind of a – basic question, but are a lot of these places have layers of security, including supposedly vicious dogs where, you know, you're intimidated by even being around?
Yeah, dogs are the go-to. So in a lot of these places, they'll have the external perimeter security, maybe some razor wire, you know, like the gate of this house. We actually had to go be let into the compound, and then the gate was shut behind us. So maybe that's another point where there was a little bit of curious moments.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that happens.
And then later when once the raid started with the guys from the back of the car, the guys outside the gate couldn't get it open because it was jammed. And so they're kind of struggling to open this gate anyways. So, yeah, you got the razor wire, you got the high walls, but then you're in the compound, there are always dogs. And more often dogs than cameras and things like that, because dogs, in their estimation, are effective, loud, and disposable. So when they move locations, they can just get more dogs. Whereas if you're having to lift and shift your camera equipment all the time, it's not a very good MO for them. They often sit in rental properties and things like that. So, yeah.
Now, in this case, were the victims were not aware of the impending of their impending rescue. Is that right, or were they aware?
Right. So this incident I'm describing was the follow-on intention to find and arrest the perpetrators. So at the initial rescue, about 9 months prior to that,
Okay, go on.
Yeah, the victims were pulled out, but the perpetrators got away.
I got you.
Right.
And this was a typical, this was a sting on steroids, essentially. You know, you see these social media clips of a sting. Hey, you know, we're talking to you, got the text of you thinking you're talking to a 14-year-old when in fact it was us. Folks, that's nothing compared to that, where there was an actual rescue of abused minor children victims. And then the takedown of the perpetrators wasn't nice. I mean, it was all out. Holy crap. And did you find arms and such in the compound?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, they're always armed up because they're not only trafficking people, they're also trafficking drugs and weapons. So most of the victims we've rescued, they sleep on a bed of AK-47s. It's actually underneath, you know, the part underneath a cot mattress kind of thing.
Yep.
And they sell those weapons, and a lot of them are smuggled in by the Chinese. They sell them to the Nigerians, and the Nigerians sell them to organized crime syndicates throughout the continent. So that's pretty common.
Wow. Okay. Now, you mentioned that during the one trial, a judge died on the bench. I mean, was there anything odd about that, or was that like a net, like, you know, hey, boom, you did?
He was old, no doubt. This was going to be his last trial before he retired. But he took a real personal investment in the stories of the victims. You know, he was very taken. He had never heard anything like this. And what I will say also is that one of the victims was Afrikaans. And he was Afrikaans. And there's something about when the story is easily imagined to be one of your own, like one of your daughters or something, that it just changes you as a human being. And so when that became evident in the courtroom, the brother of the accused always showed up to court, and he's a mobster. He runs a chop shop. He also runs a political faction that is fomenting revolution up into the continent. Horrible guy. Well, he started sending his thugs to harass the judge. And so every night when the judge would go home, and he had no arm protection, no nothing, just him going to his suburb.
Okay.
They would chase him and intimidate him, this old man. I think he got so intimidated and stuff that it had the desired effect.
Yeah, and that sets things back for sure. Well, obviously, congratulations on this magnificent multi-year project and victory.
Thank you very much. And I have two more to report, if you
Please.
Have a minute.
Oh, no, keep going.
Because it's been a season of victory. And I want the church to be encouraged that we don't just have to sit around and complain and watch the enemy destroy our lives. Like, when we push back the darkness, things happen. And sometimes we win. You know, in the flesh, we actually win in the flesh, which is wild. We know we're winning in the spirit. We know we're obedient to the Lord, and he's got a big plan where we're deconstructing the enemy. But when you win in the flesh, there's something satisfying about that, because what's meant, you know, been bound in heaven is being loosed on earth or whatever. I don't know my Bible well enough, but it's things like that. Like, you pray and then you see things happen in front of you. That's pretty awesome. And so another thing that we're dealing with across the African continent is illegal mining. And there are a whole bunch of abandoned mine shafts all over the continent. Everybody's heard about blood diamonds and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure. Well, that's happening. And the gold mines of Southern Africa are being mined illegally. This one forest where we work has 400 abandoned mine shafts, if you can contemplate that. Okay, so but the mining companies have long left. And these mines go way down. They go 800 meters below ground. And what's happened is that organized crime syndicates have been trafficking individuals to work the mines. But there was a narrative going across the national landscape that said that the people who are mining illegally were there for profit and they need to be done away with. So what happened is the government and the military started mounting up campaigns to attack the mines and get rid of the miners, the M-I-N-E-R-S. We had another theory. And so we put it on the line. We got nine partner organizations. Half of those, well, plus half of those are authority organizations. And we went in and we extracted people from two mining operations. And just so you know, these are not unguarded, unfought for locations. So this is a conflict intervention. Well, going in, we pulled out 109 men from two mine shafts. I say men, but they weren't all men. 30 of them were children.
Wow.
Okay. Now the remaining, what's the math there? 79. The remaining 79 were split up roughly 50-50 between those who wanted to be there. They were happy to make a buck and do it illegally. And half of them were actually trafficked. They had been solicited for jobs. They were kidnapped from their home countries and they were brought into the mines and dumped in the hole and told you're going to work here. And it's debt bondage, the whole thing. We, through that intervention, were able to prove that human trafficking is happening and child trafficking is happening in the illegal mining sector. Well, during the raid, four crime bosses were arrested. As of last week, those four crime bosses were each charged with human trafficking.
Fantastic. Because of your efforts, that happened.
Because of the proof positive that we showed the government that there is trafficking occurring, that it's not just a for-profit operation and for the victims. And South African human trafficking law is the most stringent law in the country. These guys are never going to see the light of day.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. And the ripple effects of that's going to be amazing, amazing. So that's that. I wanted to report that.
I'm glad you did, by the way, folks. You're listening and seeing Landon from SaveThem.org making friends wherever he goes.
Mr. Hagen's my only friend.
I'm going to tell you something. Dangerous work. Obviously, the first case, unbelievably successful. The second case, extremely successful. You've got 109 rescues. 30 were, you said, underage.
Correct.
Because of
minor. Under 15.
Under 15. Traffic victims being put into essentially slave labor. Is this conscripted by government entities, government, or is this just all or primarily the organized crime syndicates out there?
Yeah, so the syndicates run it, but they are allowed to run it.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Through corruption and buy-offs and stuff. Can I hit on one more thing? Do we have time?
We do indeed. We've got about 15 minutes, so go ahead.
Okay. Okay, perfect. The other one that I want to put on people's radar, and anybody who's listened to the Save Them podcast, you'll remember this conversation we had. We did a 3 or 4 part series on pedophilia and try to understand the movement, understanding how pedophilia works and why it's the underbelly of child trafficking. Well, we have uncovered a network, and you're going to appreciate this based on our work with Russ. There is a network of pedophiles. And in fact, I think my second most recent podcast is called Grandpa is a Pedophile. and that's because there's a network of grandpas out there who are pedophiles. Now, they're grandpas because time has passed. And what we're finding are these networks of guys from the 80s and 90s who were in the military. And there was a lot of post-World War II Nazi dispersion that happened into South Africa and the Allied countries.
Correct.
A lot of that medical experimentation came to those countries, to our countries. Well, there was an island off of the South African coast called Bird Island. And boys were brought to that island, and they were sexually abused, and they had medical experimentation done on them. We now have a network across South Africa and other countries of military-connected pedophiles in their 60s and 70s. We're scooping these guys up, and they have thousands of child porn images on their phones, and they have children in houses that they're holding and sexually molesting. It is a developed network. It's been operating. Folks, this has been going on for at least 30 years, at least. How many thousands of children have been destroyed? And it's what we're finding is, yes, there's a lot of pedophile activity that targets girls, but there is a disproportionately high amount of pedophile activity targeting boys. And now, 2 weeks ago,
I've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to interrupt your stream of thought necessarily. I've seen that, and I don't understand that. Do you have an answer about that disproportionate thing?
It has to do with a couple things. It has to do with identity, control, and spiritual destruction.
Okay.
When you sodomize a boy, you hit all three.
That okay.
Slam dunk.
Understood.
Okay, so I do want to say that 2 weeks ago, our first two arrests took place, and those guys stood for their bail hearing, and the judge said, no bail. You're going to be held in high-security prison while you await trial. And I'm going to tell you right now, those guys go into that prison having molested children. I'm not sure the trial will happen. So just so you know, there is an attack on children coming at us from every angle. And things like that are as important as, you know, shutting down the organized crime trafficking in the inner cities. Like, every child's life matters. Every soul matters to the Lord. And so in obedience, we kind of follow the sniff trail wherever the Lord leads us. And we keep coming into these, like my head of operations in South Africa likes to say, you know, we're in a new season. It just seems like we're constantly in a new season. Because the Lord kind of equips us and sharpens our sword in one area, and then he sends us a bunch of partners that we teach to do that thing well, and then he grabs us and sends us to a new thing, and we have to figure it out. And it reminds me a lot of Paul in the Bible. You know, he was running around church planning, raising up Timothys. So our ministry is very much Paulian, and we help equip the Timothys to run the church, if that makes sense.
It does.
Yeah.
Very efficient way of operating, too.
Yeah.
Okay. If you can, we showed the podcast on the mm-hmm. screen. Grandpa is a pedophile, right? I mean,
yeah.
Okay. Are these second and third generation Nazis, if you will? Or
right.
is there more than that?
It'll be both and. So at your control structures and at the implementation, paperclip style stuff, moving the technologies into the military structure, definitely Nazi dispersion. But then they started bringing in others, teaching them their ways. So not necessarily Nazi, but definitely an occult underpinning of the just raw, satanic kind of hedonistic self-pursuit. I don't even know. The bounds of evil seem to have no end. And what they do is they kind of recruit people in, and what they get them into the networks on is their sin. They use the sin lever to we saw this when you and I were in the field in Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah.
And, and you know, they had that gathering with all the kids that they were recruiting into the occult. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. It's hard okay. not to, it's hard to forget.
Yeah. And true story, folks, man, we were hunting this bad boy down and we had them in our sights. We went to the end of the street and had to do a U-turn. And when we came back, they were gone.
Not, I mean, yeah, to folks,
it was wild.
I'll tell you what, it's like Eric the Tech's over there and he's sitting there. And if I turn my head and then look over there and there's no Eric the Tech, that's some pretty bizarre stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Man, my head is still blown from that. But
When I bring that one up, the point was that there were a lot of teenagers that were being recruited into the occult. And so, and the way they get them, it's not that they're necessarily bloodline occultists or whatever, but they say, hey, 15-year-old boy, you want to come to parties where you can drink and have illicit sexual activity with any girl you want? And the kids are like, what? Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they get them in, you know, they get them into the network. And once you're in the network, it's hard to get out.
Man.
That's kind of how that perpetrates, or how that propagates. Sorry, how that propagates.
Yes, yes.
And that's how the homosexual agenda works too. With the LGBT, they have to abuse teenagers to draw them in to their network, but that's the only way they can procreate and propagate. It's the same modus operandi.
Wow. Okay, and I'm glad you connected this LGBTQ whatever that agenda to what is taking place, what you're seeing take place, and you're going after the perpetrators, because I do believe this overlap is more than just like a Venn diagram. I mean, I believe it's multidimensional. But go ahead.
Yeah, and it's at the core principles level. So, and you know this from, you know, your experience with your uncle, is that it's not only that the Nazis were occultists, they were homosexuals.
Yes.
And they were homosexual occultists, and they worship a god who's the Baphomet, who is androgynous and is transgender.
There you go.
Well, what are we seeing in our society?
This exactly. And, you know, it didn't escape me. As an aside, seeing Jack Black, the actor, I guess, supporting Biden wearing a Baphomet T-shirt. And I assume it wasn't cropped or it wasn't CGI or whatever. It explains a lot. Again, folks, Landon from SaveThem.org. If you're looking for an organization to support that does what they say they're going to do, think of Craig Sawyer in the U.S., but Landon really internationally. I'm telling you, SaveThem.org, please support them. Dig deep, because they are doing God's work. They're doing work that you can, I can't even talk about what they're doing, because it would jeopardize a lot of things, but they are doing so much. And you just heard just a small portion of what they're doing. We've got about 6 minutes. Go ahead. Continue.
Oh, sure. Sure. And when you talk about our three organizations, Vets for Child Rescue, Shatter, Save Them. Well, we're all finding, you know, whenever we have a chance to get together or talk or whatnot, is, and I think probably you experienced this in your journey with Russ Dizdar, is that we've spent so much time in our lives because of our secularization of our society, focusing on the flesh. But if you don't understand the spiritual war that's going on here, you can't understand the flesh anymore. Right. You're missing the point.
Yes.
And you will fail. And, in the past 2 days, I heard sermons that were given to me on Psalm 127. I encourage everybody to go check out Psalm 127. And the Lord is basically telling us that it doesn't matter if you're a watchtower on the wall. If the Lord's not in it, you're wasting your time. It's in vain. And so, you know, you can be out on the front lines fighting bad guys, but if the Lord's not with you, it's going to be a short-lived fight, and it's going to be meaningless.
Man, meaningless. Wow. You got that right. So, Yeah.
So, pray, please. Everybody out there who's in the Hagman world, pray for our three organizations that we will have the spiritual fortitude, wisdom, patience, you know, all these characters of God, characteristics of God, that they will shine through us so that those whom we help who have government mandates, authority mandates, that we as the church can help do what's meaningful for the Lord and his kingdom through our partners in the authorities, because their hands are tied by the secularization of government. They need us to help steer the ship. They're never going to get permission to do it themselves. But when we do it, they're allowed to do it because there are results in the flesh. So we're kind of hitting both parts of the equation, right? So we need a lot of top cover, a lot of prayer. Just keep it going. Keep the enemy on their heels. We really appreciate that.
Landon from SaveThem.org. Folks, if you only knew the half of it, if you only knew half of what Landon, I mean, this is what he can talk about. There's a bigger boat of things he can't talk about. But, man, we are seeing an exposure, a season of exposure, right? To use one year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think maybe a closing comment I can give just for those who care only about the U.S., because that kind of tends to be more on the radar, is that there are big operations currently underway in multiple states. And I'm saying tens of states where there's an attack being put on the enemy by the good guys. And pray into that. Let's keep this fertile ground for the good guys to pull it in for the kingdom, because but the work is underway. A lot of investigation and targeting and uncovering is beginning to happen, and it's happening very rapidly. So it's another thing is for us to have the wisdom to discern what's what and who's who in the zoo. It's probably the hardest part of what we do is interfacing with other humans.
So. You know, I think second only to Russ, you're the person who really helped me understand the importance of the spiritual with the physical. And I'll tell you something, it's necessary, folks, to understand the spiritual connection to the physical activities and, in your case, results. But
absolutely,
man, I want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you for sticking through the long, lengthy, and tortuous investigations and the work that you put forth and the results, though. God bless you for that.
Here's, it's to his glory, right? We're just obedient servants. And like our buddy Craig Sawyer likes to say, I mean, Lord doesn't need us, but he chooses to use us. And so if we're willing to meet him there, good things will happen. And I do want to say that the Holy Spirit is in and with us. But if we are not in the fight, where's the Holy Spirit? Still with us on our couch. Still with us on our couch. So we have to actually do things in order for him to work through us, right? We make ourselves available, and that's all it really is.
If real quick in the closing, if mm-hmm. someone wants to help you, obviously, folks, money is a force multiplier. Please donate to SaveThem.org. But if someone wants to help you, maybe they've got a specific talent or something, can they contact you, or are you not looking for that?
Yeah, so our piece is a little bit different. Majority of your operation is our people are going to be stateside. So, okay. What we do, because people do contact us all the time, is that we will refer you into our networks of trusted groups who we best think you can assist. So, yes, we have a contact form on our front page. If you want to reach out to us and let us know you're interested in helping with XYZ because you've got XYZ skill, understand that we will do our best to route you into places that would be meaningful. But I do tell every single person I talk to, trafficking and the fight is local. fight locally. Not everybody needs to be on a plane to Africa. This is happening in downtown Seattle, so go for it.
Landon from SaveThem.org. God bless you, my friend. I can't wait to see you next time and be part of an op with you. That'd be kind of...
That'd be awesome.
Reminiscent of not too long ago. God bless you, my friend. Thank you.
And thank folks, you. Thank you for having me. Hey, cheers.
Thank you. Folks, dig deep. SaveThem.org. God bless.